Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and I'll be flying solo today. My co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek, is spending quality time with his own family. Now, for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring you on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to making things that can make all of our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, Answers for the Family will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. And we will introduce you to talented authors and new innovations in the areas of health, security, and fun for your family. Well, today we're going to talk about something that's a little bit different, but first I want to bring out some statistics about what's really going on in our society. And I have a quote from Robert Glover, the executive director of the National Association of State Mental Health Programs, and he has said that states alone have cut over $5 billion in mental health services from 2009 and 2012 alone. And in the same period, the country eliminated at least 4,500 public psychiatric hospital beds, which is nearly 10% of the total supply at that time. Now, today, it is estimated that there are over 590,000 seriously mental ill patients that are ending up in our jails, our prisons, and our homeless shelters, as well as on the streets. Now, this is an example as to why our law enforcement agencies are increasingly having to deal with people who may be a danger to themselves or others. Now, when we hear or read about some of these people, and we hear that they die from a chokehold or while they're in custody, and it raises questions and obviously huge concerns. Now, we may not be able to fix the system overnight, but we can improve the way that we restrain people when they become a danger to themselves or others. Now, our guest today, Craig Zamolo, is a retired police captain and former interim chief at Walnut Creek Police Department in California, with a total of over 30 years experience in law enforcement. He also serves as the lead defensive tactics instructor for the Contra Costa County Sheriff's Department in California. Craig is a certified instructor in non-lethal force weapons, arrest, self-defense techniques, and restraint devices. He is the co-founder and inventor of a form of safe restraint that reduces injuries, protects property, and more importantly, saves lives. Craig, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you, Alan. Appreciate being here this week.
Well, I appreciate you being able to come on. I've had a chance to go to your website. I've had a chance to look at and to learn more about the restraints that not only that you are providing, but that you created. So share a little bit about your background in law enforcement and what you were running into that made you decide that it is time that we as a society upgrade the way in which we restrain people.
Sure. So I started in law enforcement back in the late 70s and spent the majority of my career at the Walnut Creek Police Department. And since, 1980, I've been teaching law enforcement in the areas of arrest control, impact weapons, officer survival skills, and things like that. I've taught numerous academies, the majority of them in Northern California, and have also spent a lot of time teaching federal, state, and county agencies in the use of techniques to control violent subjects. The issue came about in the mid-90s. Myself and the other inventor, Sergeant Ron O'Dell, were tasked with introducing pepper spray to our police department. And pepper spray was replacing CN and CS. Most agencies found that the use of that chemical device was more effective. So we brought it under organization and trained our people with its use. Shortly thereafter, I'd say within the year, they had a death in one of the states in the South where the coroner gave the sole contributory factor to the person's death was the use of pepper spray. That was later changed. However, it raised concern within our organization, and we were asked to relook, take a look again at whether or not the pepper spray was a safe product or safe tool to be using within our police department. So we started looking around, doing some research, and which led us to several studies, including the International Association of Chiefs of Police. They're looking at in-custody deaths. Brought us to a coroner, a Dr. Ray out of King County in Washington. And what we found is that pepper spray wasn't necessarily, wasn't in any case ever the sole contributory factor to a death, but it could be an associated factor. We knew with pepper spray that it was an inflammatory, and with an inflammatory, if it was getting the airways, if you have, for instance, say a quarter size airway in your throat and it swells, it becomes smaller, obviously your ability to take in air is reduced. So we did see that, and along with many other factors that were identified as contributors to in-custody deaths, and those got into people under the influence, obesity, psychological state, physical altercation, and there were just all pieces of pie that when you start combining one or more of them, the risk to the individuals increased. So as we were looking into this, a term that was coined by Dr. Ray up in King County, something called positional asphyxiation, drew us to go up and speak with him about his feelings and if he had any recommendations as far as how to manage violent subjects. So we went up and met with Dr. Ray, and the one recommendation he had, and I think you're going to find it throughout most of law enforcement, is to get away from the hogtie position, mm-hmm. which when we ran across violent subjects who fought and or ran, the number one thing is you control the hands, and that was always through handcuffs, and then you work to the legs, and we would use a strap, some people call it a hobble, where it's looped around the person's ankles and then brought up to the cuffs, and it prevented a person from kicking and running. The unfortunate part is that it placed the person, what we later found out, in a position where their respiratory system couldn't function as well as others. Being on the ground on their stomach with the ankles sort of pulled up towards the wrists, it, tightened the diaphragm. Didn't allow the rib cage to work as the bellows as they should, and therefore the odds of something bad happening would increase. You know, we know statistically that, I think it's like 80%+ of the people that we arrest, we meaning law enforcement, are under the influence of one or more drugs, and half of those are, under two or more. So with the complications of just the physical altercation, mm-hmm. violent, the person being under influence, some psychological issues, just increase the odds of people getting hurt. So, our final question, doctor said, hey, what do you recommend? And he goes, sure. Unfortunately, he wasn't aware of anything out there that would minimize, the risk to both officers and or the subjects involved in the conflict. So we went back to our organization and, basically told management, hey, it's not the pepper spray. It's a bigger picture. And we started introducing some training to our organization to have the officers become more aware of these slices of pies that increase injury or increase the risk of something bad happening during arrest. During that time, we also started thinking about, you know, what can we do, since there weren't any products out there, to minimize risk and increase safety for everybody involved. And within a very short period of time, the whole idea of the wrap came about.
What I was going to say, and share a little bit about what the wrap is, but one of the things that I want to share with everybody, and this is the beauty of radio today, if those of you would like to follow along, because so now Craig's going to tell us about the wrap, but at the same time, if you go to www.saferestraints.com, you'll be able to also see what it is that Craig is explaining. So again, if you can share a little bit about the wrap and maybe even what some of those slices were when you went back and said, look, here's some minor things that are being done that we can change a little bit. For instance, you know, you're talking about the weight on the chest, you know, no longer having somebody on top of them or pressing a knee to the back of the chest, you know, is one of those slices. So share a little bit about that. But again, for everybody out there, obviously, if you're driving, don't do this. But for the rest of you that are out there and you're at your computer and you want to add a visual component to this, please keep our window there. You can open up another window and you can follow along.
So the wrap is a very simple device. Basically, if you want to think of it this way, it's a straight jacket for the legs. We knew that if we took away the person's ability to flex the knees and or use their thighs and their glutes, you would take away not only the person's ability to run, but you'd take away the largest muscle groups and probably reduce the resistance tremendously by doing it. We were unaware of some of the wonderful results we've had from it, but that was basically the fundamental thinking behind it. Take away the flexion of the knees and the use of the hips, and, you know, basically the fight and flight would stop. Mm-hmm. Now, we knew a couple things from a lot of the research we've done, and a couple of those things you spoke about, and that was, number one, you want to try and stop the resistance as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So the sooner a restraint is applied, the less likely injury to all involved parties is going to occur. The second thing we found is that, or that was needed, is that we wanted to get the individuals into a recovery position. And by recovery position, what we mean is not just the ability to treat medically, but to get them into a position where the body can reoxygenate itself. And what we found later is our product actually had a calming effect due to the large muscle groups being incapacitated, in other words, them not being able to use it. And I'll speak a little bit more about that in a bit. So the body of the wrap, which is basically like a large cloth that is wrapped around probably from middle of the calves to the middle of the thighs, is what stops the kicking and running. We added a harness to help assist in the recovery position. And the harness goes over the shoulders and basically gets attached to the body of the wrap. And as you snug this up, it brings the individual to an uprighted seated position. And again, medically, after any sort of exertion, the best recovery position for a person is in a upright seated position. So it accomplished quite a number of things right out the gate.
Yeah, and I would think also, again, also by having somebody upright, there's a psychological aspect of that also. There's a sense of respect, and and that's one of the things that we focus on so much, is more the psychological side of it. But obviously, I can certainly see that there has to be a benefit as well.
Yes, you know, one of the pieces, the real valuable pieces, I think, is that not only safely puts the person in position, but it's humane. You know, when you look at a hogtied position where you're, you know, wrapping the ankles and tying it to the cuffs and you're carrying people, the not just the appearance, but the outcome from those positions isn't viewed by the public very well, and we know it's not a good position for people to be in. The uprighted seated position has proven time and time again in medical studies to be the preferred position. And like I said, the humane perspective of it is, you know, there's not another product out there like it. It shows, as it should, that all parties using this, their goal is to safely render and be able to take care of the individual that they're in contact with.
Mm-hmm. Now, and I think everybody knows that, you know, on the news, we're all seeing more and more to where, you know, because everybody has a cell phone now, so everybody has some form of way to film. And so we're seeing much more of law enforcement having to restrain people. It's on YouTube every day. So with that in mind, you know, we're seeing outcomes that don't look very organized. So one of the questions I think is, I think anybody can see that the device would help in these situations. Why is it that you believe that maybe everybody doesn't have this?
That's a good business question.
Yeah.
You know, we started out, we introduced this to Walnut Creek back in 1996. Our chief back then, who I like to believe was very proactive in trying to be ahead of the times and willing to take a look at new strategies on not just training but products on how to make things safer out there. You know, we have a great product. There's mm-hmm. no doubt. We're in over 400 agencies right now, probably 150 in California alone. But I would say our business model for the last 15 years,
mm-hmm.
the business side of it wasn't the most brilliant. The product is wonderful, but as they say, you can have a wonderful product if you don't have a good business plan. You know, it may take more time to break out. We have never had one of our products return. It just is a statistic. Everybody that uses it, every agency that uses it, they love it. It does exactly what it's supposed to do. It saves lives, saves injuries. You know, the Institute of Prevention of In-Custody Deaths, Dr. Peters, did an independent study and found no deaths and actually no further injuries to whether it's the subject or the officers involved in the application occurred after it was applied. You know, there's some pieces I'd like to say we looked into and figured the results would be there, but the feedback on some of them, for instance, the application of the body of the wrap around the legs acts sort of like a pair of trauma pants. So mm-hmm. you'll find that first responders, when they're going and they have a significant injury, what they try and do is get the blood back up to the major organs to help recover. Well, that's a little bit of what the feedback we're getting with the body of the wrap does. Secondarily, we got tremendous feedback. I would say 80-90% of the time, the people that are placing the wrap calm down. And what we believe is happening after talking to doctors, and especially in the mental health, is that when you take away the ability for a person to use their large muscle groups, in other words, they can't fight the product, the mind tells them to stop resisting. So sort of a way to think of it, two different ways. If I put a fish on the end of a string, mm-hmm. pull them out, they keep flopping until something bad happens.
Right.
When you take an animal to a vet, or sometimes with infants, they'll papoose, they'll wrap the child or the animal into a very tight cloth. And what happens is the body has a tendency just to calm down, and they can, you know, do their procedure on whether it's an animal or an infant. And that's what we believe is happening psychologically when the wrap is applied, is that there's no point of fighting the product. There's no pain involved. In fact, it brings you, like I said, into a recovery position, and therefore people stop fighting. And that is so critical. You know, in the hog tie with a loose cord or anything like that, the legs, knees can still flex. The person can still, you know, wiggle about. And unfortunately, as they're doing that, they're burning up more oxygen and they're depleting the body of what's vitally important for them to recover.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, because what you're saying is that as they're burning up all of that oxygen, there isn't much getting to the brain to make a better choice at that point anyway. So Yeah, I mean, it makes perfect sense. Now, you know, we get questions that come in. And again, I want to thank everybody that take the time to either email in, instant message in. And in this case, we have some. And this one reads, after reading the press release, I went to your website. The wrap looks a bit complicated to implement. I'm a retired police officer, and I know that when a situation occurred, typically we didn't have much time to subdue the suspect. How quickly can the wrap be applied, and does it require more than one person to put it into place?
Great question. We knew when we designed the product, it had to accomplish a few things. Number one, it had to follow the KISS principle. And that's keep it simple.
Simple.
So it has to be simple. Number two, it had to work. Because if it didn't work, law enforcement, first responders aren't going to use it. And last, it had to be durable. So as far as ease of application, so what we have found is that on any violent interaction with a person, the numbers that it takes to control that individual are going to be basically enough to make the application the wrap. Minimally, it takes two people to apply the wrap, ideally four. But the wrap, remember, a leg restraint is never applied until the person's hands are controlled. Mm-hmm. And when first responders first engage with a subject who is violently resisting, you know, the best place for them is down on the ground on their stomach, which limits their ability to assault the officers or deputies, and their hands are going to be handcuffed first. So before any leg restraint can get applied, the hands have to be cuffed. So whatever the level of resistance is, you know, the officers needed to do the handcuffing are usually going to be, you know, 2 to 4, at least that's what statistically they're finding, which are, again, more than enough to apply the wrap. If you have the, you know, it takes two people, and depending on the level of resistance, anywhere from 20 seconds to a minute to have the application, the wrap applied. Now, the important piece here, I think, is that once the wrap is applied, the officers can de-escalate. So, in other words, there is no more resistance. Their hands can't be used to assault you. Their legs can't be used to assault you. They're in an uprighted seated position, and officers can not only now de-escalate, but they can do an assessment and see what sort of medical needs the subject would benefit from. The unfortunate part, whether it's a hobble or whether you're just handcuffing, and unfortunately there are some agencies that just don't have anything to control the legs, is that you continue to fight whatever sort of resistance is being portrayed to you. And most people move into an anaerobic state, and as they move into an anaerobic state, especially if they're under the influence where the brain can't tell them to stop, you know, they've exhausted themselves, they keep going, medically bad things can happen, and the risk of injury just goes up tremendously.
Yeah, and I think, too, that's what people need to understand, it's a risk to everybody, you know, because I think so often, you know, what news gives you is it's a focus on what is the risk to this person who may be there because of a mental illness. They may be there because they are a fleeing criminal. At this point, the people watching this, you know, at home on their televisions or on their little screens, they don't know exactly what that is. But there seems to be this concern, okay, well, but, you know, are they hurting them? Well, as you're saying is that by controlling them in this manner, it isn't just helping that person, but it's also these other people who are now trying to control them. So I think that's important, too, to real, you know, that if everybody understands that this isn't just for that person, but it helps protect everybody involved.
It saves everybody from injuries. And
yeah,
we know the faster a person is controlled, the less risk of injury to everybody involved. And, you know, if I can add one more piece, you know, there is no good-looking use of force. You know, when law enforcement or any first responders have to use force to control an individual, it doesn't look good. I mean, that's the unfortunate fact is that when you move to that level, it's not going to be pretty. The faster, though, that we can render the person under control, the faster law enforcement can de-escalate, and the less likely, again, someone's going to get injured or injured more.
Absolutely. All right. So for everybody out there, please stay with us. We are talking about safe restraint. When we come back, I also want to talk a little bit about less than lethal. We are talking with Craig Zamolo. Stay with us.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585. Or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
Zamolo, and we are talking about safe restraints. All right. So, Craig?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. We had a little feedback there for a moment.
Yeah.
So we have some other questions and comments that have come in. This one reads, I work for a rapid transit authority for a major city. And for over the last 10 years, we find ourselves dealing with many more homeless and or mentally ill citizens than ever before. I would like to see the RAP as a tool for us to utilize for the safer restraint and greater safety for everyone involved. Thank you for this product, and I look forward to trying to get it into our agency.
That's wonderful. You know, the main reason we designed this product was to protect law enforcement and to protect the subjects that we found were getting more and more involved in. And I think, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, the mental health aspect, you know, we mm-hmm. lost so many facilities and the ability to deal with the people with mental health issues in our society that it's placed law enforcement in some very precarious situations. And this product, you know, once applied, minimizes risk to everybody involved. Still doesn't answer the need, I believe, to get help for a lot of these individuals. But in the short term, there's the ability to control without increasing harm.
Yeah, and again, I completely agree, and you're right. I mean, just because we can't fix the bigger picture right now doesn't mean that we don't make every attempt to deal with what it is that is in front of us right now. So now share with us, now we've talked quite a bit about the RAP, and obviously it's the one that I am more familiar with, but can you give us some examples of other restraining and or control tools and the results that you're finding with their use?
Well, I guess probably is the restraint that's probably used the most often, I shouldn't say most often, but fairly frequently in a lot of prison custody situations is the restraint chair. And it's a device, though, that's larger and probably can't, well, you can't transport it, you use it in like a patrol car. I gather a paddy wagon may be able to find a use with that thing, but it's not as mobile or as versatile, we don't believe, for the field use as the wrap. There are many agencies that still use a cord, like I said, a hobble-type device. I would hope, and I believe there's been enough information shared in law enforcement that they aren't continuing to hogtie. But again, all the rope does, and basically what they use it for, is to keep a person from running. Definitely does not stop a person from continuing to fight. And the sad thing is every time, whether you're moving from a patrol car to the gurney for medical treatment or to your jail facility, there's another fight or potential for a fight that ensues. And Alan, one thing, you know, I didn't mention with our product, which we believe is so critical, is that once the wrap is applied, that person can be moved from, whether it's the street or in a jail facility or medical facility, from one location to the next without having to undo the restraint and run the risk of controlling the person again. You know, what it used to be is we would hogtie or hobble. A lot of times they got medically transported. So you then fought them onto the gurney, and then you went to the hospital because they called and said the person was still fighting because you fought them from the gurney onto the hospital bed. And then if they had to be moved again to detention facility, you fought them again from the medical bed onto the gurney for there were multiple times where it put everybody at risk. Once the wrap is applied, they can move from the street to a gurney to the medical bed to your detention facility, all without having to basically re-engage with the subject, and again reducing the odds to everybody involved, which to us is a tremendous impact. You know, it gives us many more options.
And it makes perfect sense because you're not having to, and looking at it from a psychological standpoint, you're not having to de-escalate over and over again because of the fact that they've now been in a position to possibly, you know, to re-escalate. So yeah, it makes perfect sense. And I know that and there are smaller things, because I mean some of the things that we use, I mean there's things like, you know, spit masks and the things that go over the hands and things like that people out there may not also know that's there. So there are also very simple small item things that are out there that help protect everybody. You know, somebody's not scratching if you have something over their hands. Somebody's not spitting right. if you have a mask over their mouth and things like that. So you know, just so share a little bit for those people that maybe have felt uncomfortable with this as, you know, as an industry and thinking, wow, are all these things really happening? Share some of the things that are out there and some of the great success stories as to why this is so valuable and, you know, and how it's helped.
Well, like I said, the wrap has been out there since the 96. And with that being said, I can tell you it's been applied thousands and thousands of times. We knew through independent studies that injury after the application does not occur. There has been no death associated with the use of the wrap. And even, you know, no matter at times, unfortunately, whatever is introduced by law enforcement, it's going to be Monday night quarterbacked, and there are people and groups out there that will find something wrong with anything, you know, we do. But the fact is, all the wrap does is prevent a person by wrapping basically like a cloth around the knees, prevents a person from kicking and or running, and brings them into an uprighted seated position for recovery. How that can be deemed or looked at as a negative puts them in, as you said, a humane position and allows us to seek treatment to get them what they need. Which is, you know, a lot of times the first reason why we're called out there to begin with. You know, there are many devices out there. You know, you look at electronic devices like the taser, or you look at beanbag guns with, you know, the 40 millimeters, a lot of the less lethal tools, chemical agents, you know. But the fact is after any one of those products are used, and there's some great stories behind all those products, law enforcement, first responders have to go up and put hands on.
Exactly.
There's a lot of tool out there, like, you know, Star Trek, the phaser, where you shoot them and they're out for however long, and they're rendered in control. The fact is, no matter what less lethal tool is used, law enforcement has to go up and put hands on. And the faster we can do that, and the quicker, more easily we can control them and put them in a recovery position, the better off everybody's going to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we have another email question coming across. This one reads, if items like yours are available to all law enforcement agencies, please share with me why in this day and age of real or perceived police violence, every law enforcement agency doesn't have these items for restraint. So,
if you could answer that question for us, that'd be wonderful. We believe it should be in every patrol car and every jail facility across the United States. And it's not just because we invented the product. You could talk to user after user after user and on our website and see the letters that agencies supply to us on how successful this restraint device is. It's not a fancy electronic device, a taser. It's not a supercomputer in a car. It's not a camera. So the appeal, maybe the what's a good term for it? Just how law enforcement prioritizes maybe some things doesn't hit the top of the list. We believe it should be. We believe that, like I said, if after every application of whether it's less lethal or some sort of arrest, you've got to put hands on. Why wouldn't you want a product there that does nothing but benefit everybody involved?
Let me do this so that it doesn't put you on the spot, because at the same time I know that all of these agencies are also people that you want to be able to talk to. Let me put an answer in there that may be a little more controversial, but two thoughts come to mind. One is budget, and the second one is good old boy network. And so for those of you out there listening, talk to your city council, talk to your local governments, explain to them where you think money should be going. Share why you think that we need safer things like this. So that's the one. The other thing is, the investigator in me says, if you think that your department or your city doesn't have it because of a good old boy network, investigate. Find out where they're buying from. Find out what they're using it that's different. And show the overall value. Anybody that understands lawsuits today knows that if you prevent 10 lawsuits, you just paid for these items for the next 10 years. So, you know, if there's a department or a city to where too much money's going to the attorneys, you don't have to look at it and say, well, you know, it's going to cost more money. Tell them it's not going to cost more money because you're not going to be paying it to the attorneys. Now, the attorneys may not like that, but you know what? That's not our concern. So I'll say that stuff so that you don't have to. And let's hope that it gets out there because of the people. One of the things that's nice is I know kind of what our listener base is, and we have a great portion of it that works with you know, with at-risk youth. We have ones that work in mental facilities and work with that population. But I know that we also have, judges. I know that we have law enforcement officers. I know we have administrators and we have people within the school districts and stuff, because we get feedback, because we get letters. Now, I may get a few that aren't happy, but that's okay. I think we'll get, you know, 10 times as many as far as people out there saying, yes, we're going to make a difference. We have another one coming in as well. So obviously we're getting good listenership because we're getting some really, really good questions in. And this one kind of touches on what I brought up before, where it says video phones have captured many instances of police using excessive force resulting in serious injury. Can you tell us how your device will help prevent these? I think you already have, but I just still wanted to get that question out there because I want everybody to know we appreciate their input.
Alan, would you like me to speak to again or just briefly go over?
Yeah. If there's something maybe that you didn't touch on that you can add to it, I think it would be great because I love the fact that we have people out there that are obviously listening to the point that these questions mean something to them.
So I guess, you know, like I've said, the faster someone can be controlled and placed in a restraint, the less likely you're going to have injury to everybody involved, which means the sooner law enforcement can de-escalate. The level of violence that law enforcement is confronted with a lot of times dictates the length of the struggle. But what I can tell you is that the longer it goes on, not only the greater the odds, you know, for injury for everybody involved, but the worse it looks. You know, let's face it. You know, one strike with a baton versus 20 strikes with a baton, you know, the majority of the public can probably sit there and look at the one strike and go, okay. 20 of them, they start questioning, you know, what's really happening here. Mm-hmm. Why wasn't law enforcement able to more quickly subdue the person? You know, there are times when you can't, and mm-hmm. I'll be the first one to admit that. And I've been in a lot of knockdown dragouts where it goes much longer than, you know, anybody would like. But the shorter the duration, having the tools and the training for law enforcement out there to be able to manage those things more effectively does nothing but benefit law enforcement and, you know, really the public. So training and having products out there available to law enforcement are probably the two most critical things.
Well, and you bring up training, which I think is a great point. I mean, how do you train a department on a product like this, and how long does it take?
So you could probably toss this this product to any person, and within a very short period of time, they'd figure out how to apply it. Obviously, we want training to go along before anybody ever uses the product, just to increase safety and make sure that it's applied appropriately. Usually within an hour and a half of training, it can be done online. We host training blocks throughout the U.S. We have trainers all over the United States. All of our training is for free. That's how much value we believe this product is, and trying to help agencies get it out there because that can be expensive. So it can be done a multitude of ways. We do want people trained in its application, how it's used. But like I said, within an hour and a half, 2 hours, it's ready to be deployed out on the street.
Okay. Is there an average time? I mean, I know that with each individual, it's going to be different. But from the time in which the process begins to put somebody in the wrap, what would the average time be until such time that they are secured and at least physically de-escalated?
So like you said, you know, it's going to depend. The level of violence, obviously, that they're confronted with is going to dictate many, you know, a lot on the time. But I would say the average is between 25 and 30 seconds. Have seen it 45 seconds more, depending on how violent. However, once the body of the wrap is applied, in other words, the harness doesn't even have to be applied, you've taken away probably 90% of the fight. So officers can start de-escalating once that body is, which is just three straps, is simply applied around the legs. So 20 to 30 seconds, you've taken away probably 90% of the fight, and then another 10, 15 seconds after that, the harness is on and you've placed them in a recovery position off their stomach, into an upright seated position. People can get, you know, officers can get off of the individual's back. Control holds can be minimized. And, you know, there's absolutely no need for other tools at that point in time to maintain control.
All right. Well, we're starting to get a little short on time. Is there anything else that you would like to share that is something that we can do. In other words, what is the message out there for the people as to what we can do to, you know, to help this situation?
Well, first of all, we want to thank you for inviting us on the show, because I think that's probably the most critical, is getting the information out there, and especially on our product. Like I said, we've never had one of these products return because they are so effective and they work so well. The challenge is getting the information out to the public, law enforcement agencies, and them being willing to take a look at other things out there, maybe that haven't typically been in our field tools in our field for decades, but that are very effective. And we sure appreciate you, I don't say promoting it, but giving us an opportunity to speak about our product and doing the research and having the callers, you know, write in and ask some of these questions.
Well, and I thank you for that, but I also want to acknowledge what you're doing, because I think the timing is right there. I mean, we have just gone through a period of time in which there is so much focus on violence. There's so much focus on what's not being done. And there's a lot of, you know, Monday morning quarterbacks that are sitting back and pointing fingers and going, well, I'm just going to write about this, and I'm going to throw fuel on the fire. You know, I'm not going to do anything about it. And the fact that what you guys have done is you've said, okay, look, we're going to come up with a way to show that we can do this in a fashion that is safer for everybody. You know, and not just focus on the fact that, okay, yeah, there's cameras out there and everything else. But I think that if the cameras could be on this, so that the public perception would be what most of us know that it really is, which is trying to do a job, trying to protect the public, trying to de-escalate a situation. If we can get more cameras out there on situations to where somebody is being handled in this fashion, I think that it can make a bigger it'll make a bigger difference on us as a culture, not just, you know, on each individual person. So I really want to thank you for that and taking the time to come on.
My pleasure. And if I can answer any other questions, or you have any other questions that come on in, I'd be more than happy to answer them for you.
All right. So for everybody out there, and you can go to their website again. It is saferestraints.com. You can go to the website. You can gain more information. There are videos there that you can see a little bit more about what we're talking about. And if you're driving out there and you can't write that down, you know, you can always go to the Answers for the Family website. All of Craig's information and Safer Saints information will be on the site. So again, Craig, thank you so much.
Thank you, Alan. Appreciate it.
All right. And again, for everybody out there, be sure, put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday when we're joined by Sarah Ellison, author of Lessons from a Difficult Person, How to Deal with People Like Us. And if you missed or you want to share your show with your friends, please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com. And you can also subscribe or resubmit your name to download your free copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal, your 21-day guide to achieving the quality of thankfulness through self-discovery. And the next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts, and if you like them, please like us, spread the word. That is the way that we're able to reach people, and we're so appreciative of that. Be good human beings, and we will hopefully have you online next week.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.